Doc often spoke in a strangely old-fashioned way. He was sprawled on his side, breathing noisily through his gaping mouth. His battered stovepipe hat had rolled across the gateway chamber. The ebony sword stick with a silver lion's head top was in his lap, and the bizarre Lamah percussion pistol was holstered at his belt. Doc had been rescued from the ugly township of Moxon, his mind better than half gone. But he seemed to have a lot of arcane knowledge, touching on the technology of the past, the far past, even before the bombs and missiles ruined the land. Next to him, Finnegan and Hennings propped each other up. The former, stout and short, carried a gray Heckler & Koch submachine gun with a drum mag of 50 rounds of 9mm and a built-in silencer. Hennings was a tall black man with an identical HK-54A gun by his right hand. Old friends from the days with Ryan Carter and J.B. Dix on the war wag, they were tough fighting men, fiercely independent, each with a dark and macabre sense of humor. Both men wore identical clothes, more like uniforms, dark blue high-necked jumpers with matching pants, both in black mid-calf combat boots with steel toe caps. Lori Quint lay next to Doc. Ryan had noticed over the past few days that the old man and the 6-foot blonde teenager had been becoming increasingly friendly. It wasn't that surprising. In Deathlands, the first thing you needed was a reliable weapon. A friend came a close second. Lori had been the second wife of Mad Ragged Quint, the keeper of the redoubt in Alaska that concealed the gateway. The long fur coat that she wore in the chilly north was by her side. But now she wore a short maroon suede skirt, hiked up around her long shapely limbs. The red satin blouse was torn and stained. She stirred as consciousness came creeping back. Her only gun was a small pearl-handled PPK 22 caliber pistol. Ryan, feeling the familiar dizziness and pressure behind his eye from previous jumps, eventually decided to make an effort to stand. At his side, Christy Roth was coming around. He looked down at her, filling with a great wave of affection. That was the best word he felt comfortable with. Love was a word that was not much used by Ryan Carter.
By the Earth, Mother, Ryan, it's hot in this place.
I figure we're somewhere far to the southeast.
Still in Deathland?
Maybe beyond.
With no apparent effort, the girl uncoiled herself to stand by him. Ryan was a good 2 inches clear of 6 feet, but she was less than a palm span below him. He marveled at her amazing powers of recovery. Though the others were all moving, moaning, and sighing, Christie's green eyes were bright as ever, and she was leaning against the glass wall, arranging her staggeringly bright red hair with long fingers. The girl wore khaki coveralls, tucked into a beautiful pair of cowboy boots, also from the Alaskan redoubt. They were hand-stitched in blue calf, overlaid with silver falcons, wings spread wide. The toes of the boots were knife-sharp, chiseled from silver. Her gun was also silvered, a 9mm Heckler & Koch P7A-13. In the next few minutes, they all managed to stand, though Lori felt sick, kneeling with vomit drooling from her mouth. Doc knelt at her side with a cracking of knee joints, putting a comforting arm around the girl.
Where we come? Hot. Never known hot. How come we to this? Walls different color.
Tell her, Doc. Like to hear how you explain it to the dummy.
I would be obliged, Mr. Dix, if you would refrain from calling Miss Quint a dummy. She is not a mute, nor a mutey. That foul imbecile Quint never educated her and kept her in a state of terror. She is as bright as you or I. Certainly as bright as you.
Fire blast, it's bastard hot. Guess I'll leave my coat here.
Dropping the long garment with its white fur trim to the floor, he hesitated, then retrieved from a pocket a white silk scarf with weighted ends.
Why hot? Oh, my head hurts.
Lori stood and leaned against Doc. Finnegan seemed as though he was going to make some joke about the oddly matched couple, then caught Ryan's good eye and closed his mouth.
The pain will abate, child. We are now in some other hotter part of what was the United States. Unless we have been carried to one of the gateways that was established in... But let us not consider that for a while.
Ryan listened, puzzled. Doc occasionally dropped strange hints about the gateways and what they could do, as if he possessed more knowledge than he possibly could.
We enter this chamber, built long years ago, before the great nuclear conflict that destroyed this Earth as we knew it, and the mechanism operates. Instant matter transmitter. From here to there in a snap of time.
Lori's face was utterly blank, but she nodded as if she understood.
These transmitters were known as gateways. They were hidden in many locations throughout the land. I imagine most were destroyed, but they were well made, using what was called the state-of-the-art technology. Many survived, hidden within a variety of redoubts.
Like home?
Precisely, Miss Quint. Like that vision of Dante's last circle of the Inferno that you knew as your home. This is a gateway, a part of Project Cerberus. Research from scientists that was to run to the very end of Endless Night.
When was we home?
Alas, I have no really accurate chronometer, Miss Quint. But my memory, addled though it often is, recalls a transmission time of less than 0.0001 of a nanosecond. Of course, it seems longer because of the recovery time from the molecular scrambling and disassembly.
In the few jumps he'd made, Ryan had wondered how long it took. On one, he checked the chron on his left wrist, but it didn't seem to have moved at all from the beginning to the end of the journey. Doc's explanation hadn't made it any easier to understand. All he knew was that you got into one of the surviving gateways and closed the door. An infinity of scattered time later, you were in another gateway, perhaps 3,000 miles away.
So we was there and here at same time?
Doc smiled paternally at her, but the hand that squeezed the top of her thigh, where a skirt nearly met boots, was far from paternal. The old man turned his smile on Ryan Cotter, but it was quickly replaced with a taut expression of horror. The eyes bulged wide at Ryan. Doc's grip on sanity had gradually seemed to be returning, but it was still frail. He closed his eyes, swaying like an aspen in a summer wind.
The men of science, Ryan. Upon my soul, ladies and gentlemen, but they are such inhumane scum. They seek better and better ways of slaughter. Oh, the sights I saw when I was... Oh, the horrors! A young man, a taxi driver from Minneapolis, a petty thief, nothing vicious in him. I saw him used as a guinea pig for one of their nerve toxins. Saw him trying to bite his hand off, gnawing to the bloody bone. Children from Asia, experiments for the agency that... rubbing their own excrement in great ulcerated sores that they had torn in their own flesh.
Lori put her arms around him, hugging his frail body. For a moment, everyone avoided eye contact. It was Ryan who finally broke the silence.
Best we move.
Yep.
The door to the gateway opened smoothly. The anteroom was filled with chattering banks of computers and ranged equipment that hummed and whirred. Red and green and amber lights flickered. This was the cleanest and apparently best-preserved gateway control room that Ryan had seen. Above the small panel of numbered and lettered buttons by the side of